crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three.
Got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Welcome to the Red Zone. We thank you for staying up a little bit later to catch us at a different time.
Mm-hmm.
The way this is going to go is we're going to go until about 9:10. So, again, thank you very much for sticking with us. You just caught the end to a thrilling softball doubleheader. I'm Leo Stauderher, your sports director here at WZND. I'm joined by my cast of characters. We have Joey Dwyer, the assistant sports director, who has been the person that's poured the bubble bath into the water fountain outside Stevenson Hall the past.
That is no. Dude, okay, if there are ISU PD listening, that was categorically false. That was not me. Please do not show up to my apartment.
Yeah. It was definitely him. We could tweet out the address for you later, ISU PD. And our producer is Joe Kennedy. He is the destroyer of worlds, and he is making us sound better than we should.
Hey, Leo, I just want to say one thing. Thank you for staying up past your bedtime to be out here with us from 8:10
like
to 9:10. So I'm happy we were able to find something to work
for
you.
That was a little backhanded insult, but I appreciate it, Joe.
Yeah.
Guys, let's get right into it. I think we should start with that softball game because that was two big wins for the Redbirds, playing against their in-state rival Bradley, going with the sweep of the doubleheader, because now they're in the stretch of their conference schedule, so this really puts them in a good position.
And today, yeah, they won 7-0 and 8-0, so today they went out, 15-0. They beat Bradley pretty much over the span of two games, over 14 innings. Morgan Day and Mac Leonard, sheesh, man, they keep doing their thing. Like, they keep pitching complete games, and then up on the plate, they're able to step up and get some big two home runs from Mac Leonard earlier in the day. She got hit in the head, too, by a pitch, and so maybe she was getting a little wild up from that, because that would make me angry to hit some dingers.
And really, within, like, the past four games, or five games, really, with the three against Southern, it's been a power surge where they're just getting tons of solo shots throughout the lineup, and so they're not just relying on solely Mac Leonard.
Yeah.
Spencer Strandgaard's kind of been on a heater as well. She hit two home runs last Saturday against Southern and had one of her own tonight, so this lineup has a lot of pop from 1-9, and they're really just opening up on opponents.
And this team is 11-2 in conference. They're 25-6 overall. We've talked about it before, how stacked their pre-conference schedule was, and the fact that they've gotten into conference as well and just absolutely raked everybody. I'm so excited. We were talking to our good friend Marcel Francis a little earlier, and he asked me and Leo, he's like, so the softball team is good this year, right? And I was like, yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
This team, they have a clear-cut path to the Missouri Valley Conference Championship if they keep playing like this.
And I think that series against Southern Illinois this past weekend was a big statement series for the Redbirds.
Because it was big.
If you looked at all of the the pitching metrics in the Valley, pretty much every major pitching category, either in first place or second place, was Illinois State or Southern Illinois. And the Redbirds had no problem facing the Salukis there. They faced the Southern's ace, Sarah Harness, in game one, and the Redbirds had no problem. Spencer Strandgaard took her deep. Mac Leonard took her deep. Like, the Redbirds just faced one of the best pitchers in the conference and just absolutely opened up the offense. So this team can get it done against the highest of competition as well.
Yeah, and Southern Illinois, they're a great team, 29-9 on the year and 11-6 in the conference. But coming down the stretch, they're going to be facing off against Northern Iowa, who's also doing very well right now, 11-4 in conference play. So they have a chance to take on ISU, but I believe in a couple of weeks they're going to be playing each other in a three-game series. And that's probably going to be the biggest games of the year, especially coming down to the end of the season as well.
And Southern, that was a big victory for them in a multitude of different reasons. One of them being Southern was touted as the best team in the MVC in the preseason poll, so the Redbirds were second. And we talked to Kaylee Cheval about that, and we asked her, was there kind of a chip on your guys' shoulder knowing you were the best, but the preseason poll didn't reflect that, and I think there's no questions now that the Redbirds, as of right now, are the best team in the Valley, and that was a huge statement. And Joe, like you said, this UNI series, it's the first weekend of May, doubleheader on that Saturday, and then another game on that Sunday, is going to be another huge series for them. It's at home yet again, where they have been absolutely unstoppable. They're 8-1 at home, the only loss being to Southern. So if I'm on the ISU softball team right now, I'm just looking at the rest of the schedule, licking my chops, getting ready to eat, heading into conference tournament time.
And in between those games, you have Evansville before you play Northern Iowa, who's at the bottom of the league right now, 7-10. So that's a good chance, again, to boost their overall, boost their record up a little. And then to end the season, they take on Valpo, who's 1-15 in conference.
Yikes. So that is tough.
If the Birds can get 2 out of 3, at least, from Northern Iowa, and then finish the season, hopefully with a sweep against Valparaiso, I think they're in a great position to have that first place heading into the postseason.
And they're definitely poised for a potential long postseason run, especially with the long layoff this team had, much of their season last year. You can see they're just playing with a little chip on their shoulder and are just getting things done. And, you know, it's just been very exciting to see what they've done. And I think part of the reason the pitching's been so good has been they added volunteer assistant coach Margie Wright this season. And I didn't know much about her last year until I was reading some of the media notes. She was, at one point, she had coached at Illinois State way back before Coach Fisher.
Before Coach Fisher.
Had gone coach for Team USA in some Olympic games and was at one point the most winningest coach in NCAA Division I softball.
Really?
She had coached at a few other stops along here. And now she came back and is coaching in a volunteer role as the pitching coach for ISU.
And for context, you said before Coach Melinda Fisher.
Yeah, who's been here for 36-plus years.
1972, yeah.
That is a long time ago. And so for somebody to be that successful for that long, you've got to know that they're doing something right.
So the Redbirds have over 2,000 combined wins on their roster among their coaches, but the fact that you were able to add her, a pitching expert, and have her work with Mac Leonard and Morgan Day, I think has been part of the reason why they've been able to elevate their games to such a next level.
Yeah, and like you're just saying that, and how they're able to it still amazes me how it's just Morgan Day and Mac Leonard that just go back and forth between games. Like,
well, it's all about
I don't know. It's just crazy to think about, because you're talking about the pitching coaching, and like, there's really only been two pitchers, and they've obviously been the two best athletes too, because as well, they're leading the team in the hitting categories as well, and it's been just a great time to watch them.
Now, I was going to say, if you're going to talk about Mac Leonard, you have to talk about how potent she is at the plate.
Yeah.
She's been hitting over 400 all year.
Big Mac.
And she absolutely bombs balls over the fence.
Mm-hmm.
She is one of the best players that I've seen here in my time at ISU, and she's surrounded by an incredible supporting cast of hitters like Kaylee Cheval and Andrea Corsi, and the bottom of that lineup is hitting too. Spencer Strandgaard, we saw her the past couple games really make some nice contact. So up and down this lineup, they have players who can hit the ball well. They've got great pitching. This team is so complete, it's going to be hard for anyone to beat them down the stretch.
Yeah,
and you know, it's been super fun to watch them. I can't wait to see them even more. And, you know, another Redbird athlete has been picking up some accolades this past week. We have the NFL draft come up next week, and we potentially have a Redbird that could be in the mix. Offensive lineman Drew Himmelman has been getting a lot of hype regarding his draft stock. Guys, you want to tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, and it's interesting because Himmelman was one of the few FCS guys that came back for this spring season to elevate their draft stock. There's a couple others, but you mostly saw players either transfer out to play in October for FCS Division I, and then now you see not a lot of guys just came back this year, but Drew Himmelman, he's an interesting prospect because in his high school days, he played wide receiver and tight end. He's athletic, and he comes to ISU redshirts, still played in that redshirt year, I believe. He got hurt with his left foot, but I think he has a great chance to be selected in the fourth, the seventh round, because he's an athletic guy, and that's going to translate into the NFL, especially at a 6'6", 310 frame.
And I was reading just draft reports about him, but he's looking at right now, reasonably a late selection or an undrafted free agent route. And we've seen guys from ISU.
We said this about James Robinson.
Exactly. Like, we were talking about James Robinson. We were like
he's fourth or seventh round.
I remember on this show we were talking, hey, he could be a third round pick. Like, yeah. But
I think we were expecting that too.
And I don't know how he fell so far. It just must have been a strong running back class. But for Drew Himmelman, he has size. Like you said, he's 6'10", over 300 pounds. Like, that's a freak of nature. I've run into him on campus, and I'm 6'4". It's kind of jarring when you see somebody taller than you. But to see somebody so much taller and so much bigger than me, I felt like he could snap me in two if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And so just being such a physical specimen, he's got a bunch of raw talent that I think is going to be really appealing to an NFL team looking to bolster up their roster.
And especially, I think he could be an intriguing prospect, because I feel like we've seen this trend with NFL and offensive linemen in the past, where they'll draft someone with big size and athleticism in the late rounds, and, you know, maybe practice squad them the first year where they don't play as much, but then just have them work out, learn the system, learn how to be a pro, and by their second or third year in the NFL, they're ready to be starters. And I can see Himmelman has that frame and that athleticism. Mm-hmm. We saw they ran a trick play where he caught a pass and scored a touchdown.
Former tight end, yeah.
South Dakota State last year. So I think he really could have the makings to be a legit NFL player.
And another thing is, if he does have the skill set to be a tight end, the way that the league is transitioning and how much importance is put on the tight end position,
he could be on that.
He could be a tight end if a team wanted to draft him and kind of put him in that transitional role, like, especially like a goal line threat.
Yeah, maybe not like always a tight end, but he can definitely be lined up in that spot, especially with the new numbers changing too and everything. I mean, it's pretty possible.
And he's a 6'10".
Yeah. And he played tight end before,
exactly,
too, and basketball in high school.
He is a prime red zone threat if they ever get down there and are in need of somebody to just throw it up to.
Mm-hmm.
The height alone and the strength just makes him so valuable in that role if a team wanted to move him. So he is just an all-around great prospect. I've talked myself into now shocked if he doesn't get drafted.
On.
Yeah, if I'm an NFL GM, I'm taking him first round. But
but it also was announced that he was All-American first team, and he only played 3 games this year, and it kind of got a little, not heat or whatever, but I saw some stuff on Twitter saying how, oh, this guy only played 3 games, but he's an All-American. What do you guys think about that? I mean, he's been a starter his whole career. He's been on the honorable team. He's been an All-American before.
I think it just speaks to what he's accomplished and what he was able to do with those 3 games he got played, where he did so well that even though he had a smaller sample size than everybody else, you couldn't leave him off the All-American.
Yeah, if you only play 3 games, but you're the best player on the field for all 3 of those games, I feel like that warrants a little bit of praise, you know?
And he did get invited to the draft combine. That was like over Zoom though this year, so it was kind of weird. Didn't really get to showcase his athleticism.
To the Reese's Senior Bowl, when he chose to stay here. Which was, I thought, spoke a lot to what he thought about what the spring season could have been.
We had one Redbird go to the
Christian
Uphoff,
in the Senior Bowl.
And that'll be interesting to see with him. I saw that. He got a lot of praise for there. And maybe he could be a late round pick or even just an undrafted guy too.
I think with the emergence of James Robinson, and especially as we see more FCS players make that transition to the NFL more, I think we're going to see a lot more buzz comes out of Illinois State and a lot of more NFL attention, because, you know, Coach Spack and his staff, I think, have shown that they can take a prospect and over the course of 3-4 years mold them into a better player, a better pro prospect. And we even just saw that Jake Ridgeway is transferring. He could be a player that could be going from FCS to maybe even potentially Power 5. The jump he was able to make in 3 years with the Redbirds.
And I feel like it kind of started with Shelby Harris, kind of, when four years ago when he was on the Redbirds. I think that kind of really what got the Redbirds getting drafted, too, and everything, and getting to the NFL. But yes, James O'Shaughnessy, too.
Yeah.
Naperville North guy came here to ISU, and he's been on a couple of good teams. He's been on the Chiefs and now the Jaguars, too.
And we've seen Devontae Harris, Trey Roberson have been able to make that transition.
It's just every year, and now hopefully Himmelman and Uphoff, maybe a couple other guys. And
I mean, you listen to this list, like, that's like more pro prospects than some
D1,
you know,
like top
some bad Big Ten teams even have, like, to boast about. Or even, you know, some group of 5 teams.
Yeah, what is U of I got right now?
Yeah, they got a couple of good.
Yeah, I
couple of good.
Have them come play us. Well, no, yeah, I know. Have them come play us last year. Right now we're looking.
Now we gotta wait till 2028. Great. So like fifth graders are gonna be playing right now. Current fifth graders.
I know.
Are gonna be playing in a college football game against ISU U of I.
You know what? I'm gonna say it right now, guys. I think the four of us in this room, the three of us and David, I think we take on a team of fifth grade football players. I think we win. I'm just gonna throw it out right now.
I would hope so.
Is it gonna be four guys on the field against 11?
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got
fifth grade. So like one blocker, one receiver, and then
one running back and a quarterback.
Yeah. Okay.
Or two blockers. No, I think we could. I think if we run the Wildcat, they can't keep up with us.
Yeah, it's just like the intramural flag football thing we did last year. I don't know if you guys were. I think Joey might have been in there.
Yeah.
I don't know
goodness.
That was brutal.
We were not good. We were not good. They were also college age people, not fifth graders. So
that is very true.
There could be some big fifth graders, but I think we could take it against them.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's easy money. First stop beating football. Fifth grade football players, second stop, walking onto the ISU team.
We're getting there. And you know what? I think this is a perfect segue to transition. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to have an interview with Illinois State Track and Field's very own Grace Beatty. You're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to the Red Zone only on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. I'm Leo Stauderher with Joey Dwyer and Joe Kennedy. We're now joined by Grace Beatty of the ISU track and field team. Grace comes in having broken several facility records this season and now being ranked top 10 in the nation in the 5,000 meter. So, Grace, I got to start with probably our most important question. We saw that you're a native of Woodstock. So have you seen the movie Groundhog Day? And if you are, what's your favorite scene from it?
Oh, yeah, I've definitely seen the movie. And I don't know if I have a favorite scene from it or just love being able to tell people. They're like, oh, where's Woodstock? And I'm like, oh, have you seen Groundhog Day? That's where. And then I'm like, oh, that's where I'm from. So I think that's just my favorite part about it.
Is that like a big cultural thing in Woodstock? Like that's the claim to fame?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The whole downtown square is still the exact same. And the Groundhog House is still a bed and breakfast in town. And the week of Groundhog Day is insane. Like the whole, it's like a whole week of different festival celebration type stuff and all these activities. The school day is shorter. There's a lot of stuff.
You gotta love the small town Midwest. That really encapsulates it. But looking a little bit more at what you've been doing since you've been in Normal, you are top 10 in the nation right now. How does that feel? Just to be so highly ranked among your peers?
Yeah, I think it's a weird feeling because it doesn't feel real, but in a good type of way. Like I just know that I do belong up there, and I belonged up there a long time ago, but I'm finally doing what I need to do and kind of performing how I knew I could perform. So it's more like, you're where you should be, but now you just have to keep it going and you belong up there just with the other women. So yeah, it's weird though. It's like I've never gone on to the Teepers list and not had to scroll pretty far down to see my name.
And you're talking about you want to keep going forward. You broke the facility record by 40 seconds last week, but looking forward, are you trying to maybe break the 5,000 meter record here at ISU? You were so close in your last attempt.
Yeah, I think that was definitely an idea. But my better event is the 3,000 meter steeplechase, and the Olympic trial standard is 9:50, and I ran a 10:02 just two weekends ago. So I think that's kind of more what I'm going to shoot after. I talked with my coach, and I think that would be obviously, you know, we call it the clout of being a school record holder is pretty cool, but maybe going a little further and having your training block be focused towards running a faster steeplechase is more important.
So how did you get into the steeplechase? Because that's one in Illinois high school that's not run at that level. And for me, it's always seemed like a super intimidating race. Like how did you get into it? And then what kind of mindset do you have to run that race?
Yeah. So in high school, I was a 300 meter hurdler. I was just should not have been doing it. I was slow. I was all my siblings were, you know, long distance runners, and I wanted to try something different. And then I slowly realized a little too late my senior year of high school, like, okay, nope, not for you. You're going to be a distance runner. And then when I got to college, I kind of just expressed to the coach that I'd be interested in it. And it is intimidating. I said right before my steeplechase at Ole Miss, I'm like, man, I don't give this event enough credit. Like, it's pretty scary when you launch yourself over water, but it's more like the humiliation of the fall could occur any moment. So that's kind of where that is. But in order to be a steeplechaser, you just have to have like a lot of grit and kind of just like be ready to go after it and know that you're going to hurt and know that it's going to be fun and everyone else in the race is doing it too.
And you talked about how your siblings were long distance runners. And I think it's important to give a little context that you've got multiple siblings who ran or are running at the D1 level. What was it like growing up in a house with a bunch of runners who would all end up running at the collegiate level? Was there a lot of competition?
Yeah, luckily. So I have a twin brother who currently is a fifth year at Utah State and he's running. And, you know, it was nice because being girl and boy, we weren't really competitive with each other because we didn't have times to compare with one another. But having three older sisters who were all extremely talented runners, there was competition, but we also really were all supportive of one another. And now it's pretty cool because everyone, you know, follows up with we all follow each other's running now. And see, when I go to different meets and see my brother or his teammates, it's really cool. This weekend, his school is going to be at Drake. So it's going to be cool to get to see his teammates. And I can't really say what it feels like because it's all I've ever known.
Yeah, because your parents, they met at Bowling Green and they were runners, correct?
Yeah, my parents were runners at Bowling Green.
So, like, you grew up, how young were you when you kind of became a runner? Was it, like, right when you came into the world?
Yeah, that's kind of the joke, you know, small town jokes, too. They get old real fast, but the Beattie twins ran out of the womb. But, yeah, so I started running kind of like middle school. You know, we would go for our parents would take us to the track, and it was you could go play in the sand pit or you could do laps, but don't bother them. They're going to do what they're going to do. And so that's kind of just like slowly the sand pit wasn't as cool as getting to chase the siblings around the track, and it just kind of progressed from there.
And did you ever try other sports growing up? Because obviously with track and field, there's so much transitive skills that could be taken to other sports as well. So did you ever try something else, or did you always know track was for you?
I played basketball up until my junior year of high school and kind of realized that 5'6", 100-pound girl wasn't going to really go anywhere in the basketball world. So I was like, maybe I should focus on running a bit more.
And so as you transitioned your running into college, was there anyone when you first got here that you really looked up to in the ISU program who kind of helped you become the runner you are today post high school?
It was more of just the environment. When I got here 5 years ago, I just had this goal in my head, you know, I'm going to stick with the front girls until I could no longer hang. And I was finishing workouts on the ground as opposed to them all talking and laughing, but it paid off. And I remember my freshman year, my teammate, Lindsay Lewis, I was actually just her bridesmaid this past summer, but she told me, hey, you're going to be on the conference roster this year. And I was like, what? Okay, whatever. And then after that, I was like, you know what? I do have some talent that I can, if I keep working hard, I can do some big things.
What's the biggest lesson you've heard or you've learned since your freshman year here?
I guess it took 5 years to learn it, but you know, as much as everyone else around you believes in you, it's not going to work if you don't believe in yourself and have the confidence in yourself. And that kind of is what is allowing my fifth and final season to go the way it's going.
And kind of talking about that confidence, how do you get yourself mentally prepared for a race? Like, do you have a pre-race routine or just something you always think about before you go to the line?
So I started I do a lot of imagery and stuff like that, but not too long ago when I raced the 3,000 meter steeplechase, I've just been really active and talking with my coaches and telling them, you know, what's going on, how I'm feeling. At first, you know, I always thought, keep this to yourself, but now I just express to them like, oh, I am extremely nervous and this is why I'm so nervous. And the last two races, my coach just looks at me, just sit down and start breathing. Like, And just stuff like that is so simple, but like, instead of invalidating how I'm feeling, just being like, hey, let's calm those nerves, sit down, chill for a minute. It's more, that's what's helping with the confidence.
And when you're getting ready for a race like that, do you have any superstitions or routines that you go through, any certain music or anything like that, that really puts you in the right mindset?
No, none of that. I think it's more, I just have, I'm very much structured in it. Like I run 4 miles before the day before. I don't like to go over four. And then that day I'll get up and run, do like a 2 mile shakeout, and then just kind of go throughout the day. I guess get an iced coffee. I always get an iced coffee the day of a race, but that's more a necessity on a regular basis.
And how is it from switching from indoor to outdoor, and which one do you like more?
I definitely like outdoor more, as it has a steeplechase, it's not really any different. I don't really put much thought into it. I run the 5,000 indoors, and then I didn't have any indoor eligibility this year, so I race just unattached. But outdoor is definitely my stronger suit because you have that steeplechase in the 5K.
And do you have a favorite track you've competed at your collegiate career? Because obviously with both indoor and outdoor, you get to travel to some pretty cool places in the country. So like, where's your favorite place to run at?
Well, my favorite place to run at is probably out in California, just because we, pre-COVID, and then, I guess we didn't go this year, but there's always like really, really big distance events, or distance races out in California every year. And it's kind of, when you go, you make a lot of good memories with, you know, like four or five people who go. It's like the top distance people, and the weather is always perfect. And my brother always races out in California because he goes to school out in the West. So it's just, I would say going out to California is definitely the coolest.
Do you have a favorite memory of traveling out somewhere to go to a meet, whether it be seeing your brother or just anything, that when you reflect on your years here at ISU, you're really like, okay, that was my favorite meet?
Yeah, I would say probably my 2 years ago when we went out to California, our assistant coach brought us, and I was the only girl that went, and then we had four guys who went, and it was just really cool because I got my twin brother ran really well, I ran really well, and we just kind of got to hang out a day in California, just us two, and kind of do stuff and hit up cool coffee shops. And it was just lots of memories were made that when we went out to Sacramento.
So your brother was at that meet too as well?
Yeah.
Is that the only one that you guys have been with together, or is there others that you guys competed with?
Yeah, I think regionals, first rounds, and the races out at Mount Sac are the only meets we've ever been to together. And he was supposed to actually be there this weekend, but he his coach and him have some new training plans, which kind of stinks, but I have to not be selfish. I don't have to see him if he's got some big things happening, but we'll see each other in Texas this coming May for regionals, because he'll qualify in the 10K.
And then you came back, you've mentioned before that you came back for your fifth year. What was your process to wanting to come back? Was there some unfinished business from the way last season ended?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of the academics and the running. I wanted to get my master's right after my undergrad, so that kind of worked out. I got into the accelerated program so I could just do it in 2 years. I chose a part-time so I could really focus on the running side of things, and really I put a lot of pressure on myself for, you know, coming back, and had some pretty tough performances and heartbreaks from all the pressure I was putting on myself. And then the last couple of weeks I just have kind of switched it to like, hey, you got this opportunity to come back and do what you love one more time. Like, have fun with it and make the most of it. Nobody expects anything from you, and that's kind of where the success is coming from.
Was there any additional pressure on you knowing that the NCAA had decreased the qualifying pool from 48 to 32?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, up until kind of looked the last couple of years, I've qualified for first rounds, and I've seen, you know, where I was, and I was right around that 32 mark. But every year the times are getting faster, you know, just like everything else, you know, the shoes are becoming more, the technology in the shoes are making people faster, and there's just so much factors that go into it that I was like, ugh, you know, I've been 32nd and 33rd on that bubble. And before both races that I've run this year, my coach kind of said, hey, all you have to do is go out, run this time, you'll get in the first round. So he kind of told me the calculations of what exactly time-wise I had to run. So it was like a 16:10, 5K will be a for sure, and a 10:15. So kind of going into the races knowing, hey, if you run 10:15, you're okay, you're getting the first round. And then everything else after it is just like excitement and PBs and stuff like that.
When you're not racing, what's your favorite event to watch?
Probably the throws, which is a weird event, but mm-hmm. I got a lot of friends on the throws team. It's a weird dynamic having a skinny little distance runner with the strong throwers, but yeah, probably throws.
And how far do you think you could throw the shot? Because at my high school, we always do a split squad meet to start outdoor season where the distance guys would do the throws and then the throwers would run a distance race. So like if you had to cross over, how well do you think you could do throwing?
Not far. They would throw me farther than I could throw the shot. they always mess around with me and come pick me up at practice and stuff. And just, it's like, oh shoot. Yeah, I can't mess with them. I can't get myself in trouble. They're pretty strong.
It's a good group to hang out with. They're there to protect you then.
Oh yeah, they're there to protect you. But man, I wish I could live their lifestyle sometimes. I see what they get on, what food they bring on the bus, and I'm sitting there eating like rice cake, wishing, man, that looks pretty good, but I got a race.
And so as you head into the end of the season and regionals, what's one thing that you're really keeping in mind just to motivate you through your final season here at ISU?
Yeah, I think kind of just like the idea of doing it for yourself, and you know, you've put all this hard work in the last 5 years and things haven't gone your way the entire time, but there's no reason they can't go your way now. And something that I keep, you know, being, I always race really well when I know, you know, who's in my race and that I belong in that race. So being top 10 in the nation, kind of when you get to that first round, you know, it's knowing what you got to place in the race, but knowing that you can do that in the on paper shows that you just have to have the same day you've had every, you know, day this year, and good things will come.
And are you always motivated to run? Do you ever wake up and you have days where you just don't really feel like getting
up? That was today. Definitely today. I had to get up, and everyone's racing tomorrow, so they all had their pre-meet, but I'm not racing till Saturday, so I had to do a solo 13-miler this morning, and it was just not really feeling it, but I got it done and got Starbucks to reward myself.
I cannot even fathom running 13 miles, just waking up and like that's what you have to do. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
At least you got the Starbucks though. That does sound delicious.
It's much needed.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WCMZ.
Welcome back to the Red Zone with Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy. We're now joined by David Moses, who not only is one of our news and sports staffers, he is also a Brother Rice football legend. David, welcome very much to the show. Tell us, our listeners, about what you want to bring to the table tonight.
First off, I want to thank you for the Brother Rice football legend. But, you know, in the NBA, as things are starting to, you know, get into the late season, we're starting to see a lot of teams really feel pressed for time. You know, trying to get into the playoffs, and you know, as a Bulls fan, a fan can only hope. Right now, you have to be optimistic about where the team's at, but I just think they need a little bit more time to get adjusted to this team. You know, especially with the new acquisition of Nikola Vucevic, I think it's just we need time.
Okay, so let's start there with the Vooch deal. And it really seemed like this trade deadline, the Bulls were ready to go all in, right? And since then, they've really struggled to put anything together. So what are the factors that you think are contributing to that?
Well, you know, for quite some time now, the Bulls have really relied on Zach LaVine to carry the load for them. And now that you have two all-stars, that's a tough thing to adjust from going strictly to just focusing on one guy who is leading in scoring and pretty much every major statistic for the team, and then going into having Nikola Vucevic, you know, he has to get the ball too. So I think it's just they're trying to manage both of, you know, those superstars.
And what did you think about the decision to be so active on the trade deadline? Because I felt like originally the message from the Bulls was that this year they were going to evaluate what they had on the roster. What did it say to you that they were willing to trade future draft capital and a young player like Wendell Carter for a bona fide NBA starter? What does that speak to you about where they are in their rebuilding process?
You know, it just shows that the front office is working. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we were kind of stuck under Jim Boylan and Gar Pax for so long that now that we have a revamped front office, it just shows that they're really, you know, dedicated to turning this team around.
And so let's move to looking at the rest of the Eastern Conference. Okay, Joe,
I just want to say one thing about the trade because
I heard the side. Joe was answering the phones for the giveaway.
I had to do a quick little call, so I wasn't here for the first minute. But with the Vucevic trade, Wendell Carter now, he's playing his best basketball of his entire career now with the Magic. And Vucevic, he's great offensively. He averages double doubles, 99 out, 2-time All Star. But on the defensive side of the ball, it still seems like the Bulls are still very big to worry down low in the paint with Vucevic. But I mean, it's their defense has also improved though, but not on, I would say, on the low block. But I would say Troy Brown Jr., that's another underrated signing or trade that they acquired on the deadline day, and I think that's going to help them contend as well with this defense.
I think it just says something about the Bulls' deadline moves that they didn't go out and acquire these old veterans that are past their prime. Like, they got players that can mm-hmm. still play that could potentially still get better. So I think
it's just risky.
Forward thinking the management that pick. Is.
Okay, so now let's move to the rest of the Eastern.
just had to throw that in there.
You're good, Joe. You're good. So let's move to the rest of the Eastern Conference now. Because there have been some real surprises that have come out of the Eastern Conference. But for your money right now, who's running the table?
If my life was on the line, I'm giving it to Brooklyn.
The world that did. Give me Iguodala. No, but I agree. I'm Brooklyn.
It's just too many stars on that
you
team. When they're healthy, you're not going to be able to keep up with them. Kevin Durant, I think he's out right now with another injury. But, mm-hmm. you know, once he heals up, him, Kyrie, and James, you can't beat that.
But I think that is something that you have to look at is how banged up these stars have been on this team all year. It's kind of concerning when they're going in against some really good Eastern Conference opponents.
Yeah.
There are a lot of teams who have had a lot of success. One of my favorite teams in the East right now is the Knicks. I just think they have they are so fun to watch. They have so many good, young, talented guys. If I had to pick like a sleeper to come out of the East, and I want everybody to remember that I was the one last year who picked the Heat out of the East, so not to toot my own horn, but I'm kind of
going back to back big picks here.
So
picking the Knicks.
If I had to pick, I truly think that the Knicks are a couple years out from truly contending.
Yeah.
But if I had to throw out like a hot pick, I think the Knicks are really good. The Hawks also are awesome, but they lost Trae Young. Was that last night or 2 nights ago?
They just released it today. It's not as bad as it seems.
Okay.
I was
watching the game live, and that looked bad.
Yeah, it's like really bruised up, like his ankle, and it's like puffing out. But it says like once that goes away, he's gonna be able to like walk back, and like he should be able to play by the end of the season for the playoffs.
Okay,
so that's important. But I don't know. The Nets are just scary to beat. The Sixers just lost to the Bucks too, as well. Those are two teams that still have great quality on their teams, with the Sixers and Joel Embiid going as an MVP favorite right now, probably either him or Jokic or Curry. We could see that too. But the Bucks, they still have Giannis Antetokounmpo, and they still have Drew Holiday, who's been really well for him.
I am just not sold on the Sixers nor the Bucks when it comes to playoff success, just because especially the Sixers have been good for a number of years now, and
the Bucks too. Underperform, I guess.
Both of these teams are known for underperforming in the playoffs in the past 5 years, and especially with the Bucks. Like, if any of those shooters outside go cold, you can't rely on Giannis to carry you to the chip, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really think that I agree with what you're saying about the Bucks, but I don't know. Joel Embiid.
Joel is playing out of his mind this year.
He's been playing tremendous basketball, and I think that he can lead the team to the Eastern Conference Finals.
And I think he has a better supporting cast around him than Giannis has in Milwaukee. Not a knock on, you know, Chris Middleton, but I think Giannis has a couple of really, really good guys who could be leaders somewhere else, too. But it's just it's hard to trust them when everything in the past says they're not going to make it.
Because the Sixers before, I feel like they were missing that shooting, but now they have Danny Green, Tobias Harris can shoot, Joel Embiid can shoot, Seth Curry, he can shoot, George Hill, who they got from... I think he was just a free agent over the offseason, but was on the Bucks too.
Yeah, the Bucks.
Yeah.
I will say, Seth Curry, a better 3-point percentage in his career than Steph. Is Seth Curry the best Curry brother?
Come on, how can you say that?
We're not that kind of show.
When Steph Curry is literally dropping 30.
Okay, so let's talk about Steph Curry then, because we were talking about that, and we all had to kind of hold our tongues before the show, talking about should Steph Curry be the MVP? Does somebody want to start off one way or the other?
I could get started because I feel like, you know, so the MVP is most valuable player. I think if you take that player off their team, what would that team look like?
They'd be worst team in the league, probably.
And exactly. And you look at Golden State, but, what they would be without Steph. Granted, he hasn't taken them.
They're still only in 10th.
Them. But I think that team would be so much worse without him. With what he's asked to do, I think, you know, you look at some of the other players where they do have a complimentary cast. Steph doesn't have that as much, so he is worth so much to his team that I think that could be worthwhile of an MVP award.
Yeah, I agree, but I also think Nikola Jokic, now with Jamal Murray being out for the entire season with the ACL, like, if he continues this stretch towards the end of the season, he just came off 47 points, 15 rebounds, and 8 assists on the other night, and I think it's either up to him or Embiid. Just because Curry, it kind of started to pick up later in the season. Yeah. It's only been the past, like, 15 games where he's gone lights out. He had those 11-game streak of 30 points in a row. Like,
that was just snapped, wasn't it?
Yeah, just snapped a couple of nights ago against the Hornets. Like, he only had 18 points, which kind of crazy. But Hornets, solid team as well. But I think Nikola Jokic and the Joker, he's deserved it. He's always been in the MVP conversation, too, in the past 2 years. And I think this could finally be his year that a center also wins.
He finally started getting more the respect he's been owed during the bubble that he kind of went off in that series against the Jazz, too. Like, I think he's finally getting some due respect that's been earned his way for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to take it back to a point where you made, Joe, when you said that Nikola Jokic didn't have Jamal Murray. Well, Steph Curry hasn't had Klay Thompson all season.
That's true.
And, you know, when you think about it, Draymond Green, I don't think he's just the same player he was.
Not really,
back in 2017.
But his sub has bacon on it, right?
He has rings. His sub has rings on it.
Yeah.
Because he's won those rings.
So his sub doesn't even have bacon, that's right.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it, though, with Klay being out. Because that's so unfortunate, especially after he had the Achilles and then you think he's coming back, and like you think the Warriors are back. It's like the Warriors won 3 championships and just dipped.
Yeah.
it's like, what's happened to him?
Like, ever since that Toronto series, they have been swept
with
so many.
With KD, too.
Long-term injuries.
Yeah.
And my only knock on Steph for MVP, because he has been putting up career-defining numbers in this past month or so.
30, yeah.
And he's been absolutely unreal. But the Warriors are in 9th in the West, and I think, when you look at how the season is shaped up,
I think you have
to go with Joel Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Sixers are the best team in the stacked East, and I think he has had the best impact, because taking back to your argument, Leo, if you take Joel Embiid off of the Philadelphia 76ers, how are they? I don't think they're top 8 in the East.
No, he was not playing for about a big stretch of the season, like 10 games, and they still did all right with them. I think they went above 500, but I agree, though, too, with that. Like, if you take any of these guys off the teams, that's why they're MVPs, because if you take them off...
Like, it shouldn't be the best player on the best team. It should be the player who is worth most to their team. So that is a good point how you mean. Would this team still be in first place without him? I just think Steph's doing an almost impossible task with his team. And as we near the end of the segment, I think we should just go around the table, ask real quick,
finals?
What do you guys have predictions for the NBA Finals?
Yeah. David, you on?
If it's me, I can't bet against LeBron in the West.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, I'm going with the Nets. So the Nets versus the Lakers, but I think the Nets are going to take it all this year.
Okay.
Is it over to me?
Yeah.
Okay. I came here only to make enemies. I'm not picking the popular ones. I know they're going to be wrong. I know that, but this is the finals that I want to see.
Or Roberts.
All right. So you already know I want the Knicks out of the East.
Mm-hmm.
And then the West, Give me the Suns, man.
Yeah, dude.
Give me the Suns.
But I don't think they're going to... Yeah.
But they're
going to make some noise. I definitely agree.
They're good. I think from the bubble last year,
yeah.
I think that they've only improved since then.
With Chris Paul.
They're a force to be reckoned
with.
Okay,
so Suns, Knicks.
Suns, Knicks.
Leo? Pick, you know, you got Thibs and D. Rose in the playoffs together, so who knows what could go wrong there.
Yeah.
But I'm going to...
Why'd you
got to
do that, Leo?
You guys know I do that. I'm going with Lakers versus Sixers in the finals. I think this might be the year the process finally works for the Sixers, but I still think the Lakers are going to win it because mm-hmm. you can't bet against LeBron. I guess you can bet against LeBron in the finals, but against that Sixers team, I think he could get it done.
Yeah, I'm going to go Nets because they're just loaded on the team. They can shoot. Can't even sleep on Joe Harris, too, another great three-point shooter. No one's been talking about him, too, this year really as much. But out of the West, I mean... Lakers, but Clippers with Rajon Rondo now that they've added him, they're gone like 8-1 since they've added him at the deadline, and they've been one of the best teams in the league. So I'm going to go with the Clippers with Kawhi too, but playoff Paul George,
playoff P,
he can kind of he's known
give me,
to be not as good since he left
P.
the
give yeah. pandemic P.
Yeah. But yeah, I got the I'll go Clippers and Nets there for my final.
It's going to be fun to look back on these and see just how wrong we all are.
Oh, I guarantee. I guarantee.
I think one of us is right. Like
one of I guarantee at least one of us gets at least one of our teams in the finals.
That's all that matters. And we're going to send it a quick break. When we come back, because we want to feel even worse about ourselves, we're going to talk about some NFL and some Chicago Bears. You're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone with Leo Sauter, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kenny, and David Moses. As I mentioned before the break, we're going to talk some NFL Chicago Bears. It's been an offseason, guys. I think most of you know I'm a big fan of Chicago sports talk radio, and I listen to a lot of it, but
yeah, you do.
Whenever they turn the bear talk about Bears,
oh my God,
I turn
it off
because
out of...
I just want to pretend it's a nightmare that if I choose to ignore it, it's not happening. The Bears have made some moves this offseason, guys.
Yes, they have.
We don't know if they're the right moves.
We know they're not, probably.
David, why don't we start with you? What do you think of the Bears' offseason so far, 7 days away from the draft?
As a diehard Bears fan, I haven't been too disappointed.
Okay.
I think the biggest hit was Kyle Fuller. Leaving.
Oh, my God.
But what we have to realize is that the Bears are going to be in a tough space when we talk about cap space in the coming years, because we do have Roquan Smith, we do have Allen Robinson, who still needs to be paid, and anybody else that needs a contract renewed. You know, it's going to be tight, so I understand the move, and I think that Desmond Trufant was a great pickup as a replacement. So I'm excited to see how it translates to, you know, the season.
That was way too logical for my meathead sports brain. But you're right. That does make sense. And I'm so attached to Kyle Fuller. He's been a great member of the Bears for so long. But you bring up a great point where we have a lot of good young players. David Montgomery, you said, Roquan Smith. We've got Darnell Mooney.
Cole Kmet.
Exactly. So many of these guys who are going to have to pay. And we have guys that we're paying, Eddie Jackson, Khalil Mack, mm-hmm. Nick Foles. So, like, these are guys that...
Who?
I didn't hear you say that. But, these are guys that we are going to have to pay here eventually, so...
And I think it's also worth mentioning is that for everything Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy do wrong, I think they have been good at identifying defensive talent, especially in the later rounds in the draft, so... I mean, you're not going to find a number one cornerback in maybe the fourth through seventh round, but you could find a good player, a replacement level player to substitute eventually. I mean, Jalen Johnson, he was a second round pick, so still an early round pick, but they have found good value from, especially in the later rounds with the defense. It's the other side of the ball I don't trust them drafting or even signing all the time with, but.
Yeah,
I think they can find a good player defensively.
It's like it's always been the thing here in Chicago. Defense. They know everything about defense. We always have a very solid defense. But on the offensive side of the ball, we can never figure things out. Like, when's the last time? I guess the Bears with Cutler, Brandon Marshall, Sean Jeffrey. That lasted two years.
But that was such an odd deviation from the norm when it was Mark Trestman who put together this incredible,
offense.
But that and
was
the defense
it.
Was absolute garbage.
Right.
They were, like, worst in the league. But boy, should we just get to it?
QB1.
The QB1.
Yeah, but I mean, Andy Dalton, he got into a bad spot with the Cowboys. But he didn't play great. But as he played last year, he was able to bring the Cowboys kind of back from back from death, kind of. I mean, he took on a streak where he was able to put them back onto a playoff position as he won six games out of the last eight.
Let's put an asterisk. This was an NFC East playoff position.
Yeah.
So it was like a 7-9.
But he bought him back, though. But I mean,
but you're right.
Still,
and
like, I don't like it, though.
And I think that he is not the best option the Bears had.
No.
But he's also not the worst.
I think that was always the measure for mediocrity in the NFL for so long. Is your quarterback better than Andy Dalton or worse than Andy Dalton? Like, you're in a good spot if he's better than Dalton.
And
if he's worse, not so
and
good.
And I will take a mediocre quarterback over Nick Foles.
Yeah.
So, every day of the week, I will.
The Red Rocket. Like, this guy got red flow coming out of his
and
helmet.
He's so nice.
He's a nice guy. Like, we gotta respect his morals and everything. We gotta respect his personality.
Well,
he wants to be here, and like now we're with him. We can't go against him. We can't go against Andy Dalton. Like, we could go against the front office of the Bears,
right,
but we're not gonna be hating
Andy
to him.
Signed the contract that was offered to
yeah.
him, so you can't fault him for that. This brings me to the next point. Do you think they're done with signing Andy Dalton? Is that gonna be the move, or are they still gonna be improving the quarterback room potentially through the draft next week?
I have had April 29th penciled in for quite some time now, and I tell you, I cannot wait until they draft the number four and get Kyle Trask over Trey Lance. And
oh no,
no, kind of just a deja vu back to 2017.
Yeah.
all jokes, but in all seriousness, I think they're not. I don't think they're done. I do think we're gonna trade up. And hopefully it's for one of those top four quarterbacks.
Yeah, if they do, it would better be one of those quarterbacks. But if they're picking at 20 and they're going to pick Davis Mills or Kyle Trask at the 20 spot, I would be fairly upset with that because there's a lot of glaring needs you need on the O-line or even a corner. But, I mean, you don't even need to pick on defense, I feel like, in the first round. I would go with an offensive lineman, even a receiver at that spot. But it's just going to be interesting to take a look at because, I mean, I've seen a lot of things where Davis Mills, the Bears, are taking a great look at him.
That just bugs me because I feel like that's not going to be an upgrade over even Mitch. Like, so if you're going to draft another quarterback, it has to be an upgrade over everything you have on your roster, but especially at 20. Like,
and that's a big reach.
Also, watch out for Kellen Mond out of Texas.
Yeah, and I do like Kellen Mond.
You know, watching his pro day, you know, he was slinging that rock, and I think the Bears are penciled in on him as well.
Hopefully in the second.
I think another good pick for the Bears in that first round would be Greg Newsome out of Northwestern.
Yes, yes.
Really good corner.
I played him in football. Freshman, sophomore year at Glenbard North he went to.
So Joe knows firsthand how good he is.
Oh.
And I think he'd be a great pickup for the Bears who, like you were talking about, with Kyle Fuller, the Bears are so shy on good corners because we've got Jalen Johnson, Desmond Trufant.
I think they really think highly of Kendall Vildor, though.
Yeah.
I think so, too. And then you've got Duke Shelley and who's the other guy that I'm forgetting?
Annis.
Stephen Denmark?
One of these guys.
Actually, Trey Roberson is
They've got this big rotation of like depth guys in the secondary, but I really would like to see them take somebody who will be that cornerstone for the franchise. Either that, or I would
tackle on offense.
I would not mind. I would not. Speaking of guys out of Northwestern, right?
Oh, we won't get Slater.
I'm just saying.
Unless they move up.
If the Bears want to move up and draft Rashawn Slater,
especially on the offensive side, like they. If they can just improve the O-line a little bit, maybe get a first-round pick on someone on the offensive line. Like, there's an Oklahoma State guy who's been put up on them mock drafts. A couple other guys, late first round, early second round. But you got the weapons on the offense with David Montgomery, Robinson Mooney, Graham Kmet. Like, they got some, and now even adding Marquise Godwin, too, like a speedster out on the outside. Like, Nagy loves that, but he's an Olympian, so you gotta accept an Olympian.
I mean, he's no Cordell Patterson when it comes to gadget players.
Yeah.
But
the only thing that worries me about him is his age. I think he's 30.
Yeah,
31.
It really has shades of when the Bears brought in Ted Ginn
or Victor Cruz.
Oh my God, I forgot about
who, like Heinz who didn't Ward. Even make it to the season.
Like, I feel like they always do that where they bring in a guy like 5 years too late who was like. Had like 99 speed in Madden and like Madden 16,
right.
And like we could plug this guy into our offense. Like,
but
he's just too old at that point.
When you think about it, this offseason has been so similar to the one in 2017 when the Bears drafted Mitch.
Yeah.
You know, they got Mike Glennon and they proclaimed him the savior of the Bears. it's kind of similar here where they got Andy Dalton, and now they're it seems like they want to ride him through the season.
And it feels like this team, and it's been this way for the past 4 years, is a couple pieces away from being a real contender.
And a coach, maybe.
Maybe that's one of the pieces.
Yeah.
But it's always seemed like there's just one aspect of the Bears that always falls short, and so we're doomed to this eternal purgatory where we get into the playoffs and get bounced first round or just miss the playoffs.
So are you saying like that maybe that should be a reason maybe why they shouldn't pick a quarterback this draft, is that they should figure... improve the rest of the roster, and then when you know you're one piece away, that's when you need to take the quarterback?
I think that would be a better option. Ride it out with Andy Dalton and really try to develop the pieces around him. Try to replace some of those pieces you lost on defense, build up that offensive line, maybe get a receiver or two, and then when you're in a position where you're ready to take that next step, then you can make a move on a marquee free agent quarterback or take a good quarterback in the draft, and then you plug him in to a system that is tailor-made to win a championship.
Because picking at number 20, you're not going to probably get a good quarterback
you're
unless you're trading up.
Quarterback unless
if they could trade up to maybe 10 and get Trey Lance, I would do that.
Unless Kellen Mond is severely underrated, which I do like him.
But I just don't like picking that late.
I know.
It'd have to be one of the top four.
Hey, Lamar Jackson went 32nd.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say.
He was just super athletic, though. Like, I mean, I think everyone was tweaking. There's no one in this draft that's kind of like Lamar Jackson. He was a Heisman Trophy winner, and that's crazy to think about how he never got picked.
How do you pick a Heisman Trophy winner at 32?
The Ravens locked into that one. Oh, my God.
And they passed on him originally. They traded up to take the 32nd pick.
Yeah, they got Mark Andrews before him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Mark Andrews is a dog, too.
He's a
Pro
Bowler. Yeah. They got some good receivers there in Baltimore. But looking towards next year, what do you think the NFC North is going to be looking like? You think the Bears have a chance? Packers? Vikings are always just...
I think that it's going to be Packers, because of course it will be.
Aaron Rodgers.
And then,
the only reason, Blake Hornstein, as he is an Aaron Rodgers fan. He's not a Packers fan. He's an Aaron Rodgers fan.
I think it'll be the Packers number one, and the battle of the three poverty franchises for
second. Probably Vikings, Bears. I could see Bears go second.
I don't know. I don't think any of them will make the playoffs except for the Packers, because the Vikings are getting so old.
Yeah.
The Bears are not good, and then the Lions... Sorry, Steve, but the Lions are the Lions.
The dude is their coach now.
That's true.
He just spouts just generic football meatball quotes, so you can't get worse than that, right?
So, all right, so David, going into the draft, before we wrap up here, we're going to have a big draft segment on the show next week, but if you... So you wake up, it's Freaky Thursday, right? It's April 29th. You wake up, you're like, oh my goodness, what's going on? I'm Ryan Pace. What are you doing with that 20th pick? What is your draft strategy?
If I'm Ryan Pace on April 29th, I'm moving up, and I'm sticking with it. I'm getting me a quarterback. And this might surprise you, but I'm taking Mac Jones.
So what are you willing... What would you be willing to mortgage than to get up there? Because you're obviously going to have to get rid of the 20th pick.
Yeah.
But it might come... If you're trying to get Mac Jones, that'll be a top seven pick. Are you willing to get rid of any of these cornerstones? Like, what if you're trying to get the pick, they ask Roquan Smith?
Roquan Smith is untouchable.
Thank God. Okay.
Yeah.
I scoff at anyone who says different. It's definitely going to take the, like you said, the first rounder this year, maybe the first rounder next year, especially if you're trying to move into the top five, and then one of those cornerstone players, probably, does Anthony Miller count?
I don't know if you can count him as a cornerstone, but I like the optimism.
Maybe even a first round pick in there too. I don't know. It depends where you're moving up to and how much you really want that pick.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I'm both nervous and excited. We're just about out of time here, but it was a great show. Thank you for sticking with us so long after the softball doubleheader. Great show. We'd like to thank Grace Beatty for coming on, David Moses for sticking around with us late night. Segments. It was fun, though. If you missed any part of this week's show, you can catch it on WZMD.com in podcast form. Joey has something to say.
And I just want everybody to know that because it is 9:10 after this, I will be tucking Leo in and reading him a bedtime story. So if we could all get quiet hours on campus, please.
Thank you very much for that, Joey. I look forward to it. That's going to be all we have here. So for Grace Beatty, David Moses, Joe Kennedy, Joey Dwyer, I'm Leo Starr, her signing off. We're going to be back next week for our final show of the semester. This has been The Red Zone.
and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 1033 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.